All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's October 15th, 2025. And we're talking about this again, guys. We have to. It is the biggest story in the world right now. It should scare the pants off of people, especially people who don't own any. I am talking about precious metals once again. First things first, gold hit $4,200 last night for the first time ever, $4,200. That is yet another all-time high. These are daily occurrences here. I'm sure gold going up in a straight line is great news for the average person who doesn't understand what that means. It's going to be great. You guys are going to love it. I mean, look, if you own gold, if you own silver here, you're loving life. But all of us know, metal stackers, precious metals enthusiasts, we know what's happening. We know why it's happening. And we know it's not good. And yet we've been like sucking the air out of the room at parties for years. We hate to just keep beating that drum, but this is not good for the average person, especially the average paycheck to paycheck person who owns no assets. This is currency becoming worthless. And that's just the gold thing. What's happening with silver? What a freaking mess. The silver market is in chaos right now. And it's interesting because it's a very regional phenomenon. Here in the States, there is plenty of silver, ample inventory at all the coin shops, right? I mean, even though there are stories of buyer enthusiasm returning here, I mean, coin shop dealers or coin shop owners and metal wholesalers and dealers, they're swimming in inventory. But overseas, there are severe shortages developing. We've talked all about what's going on in London, about how the ETFs have just gobbled up all the available metal, but now it's starting to spread to other countries as well. Now, we had an interesting story over the last few days coming out of India. These ETF fund of funds, which is something I've never heard of before. I had to go look up what these things even are. ETF fund of funds are freezing silver investments, because the regional price in India has totally divorced from the rest of the world. India, obviously, is a very precious metals-sensitive market. Indians have always been big gold buyers. Now they're getting into silver. And the price of silver in India has dislocated from the rest of the world, trading as high as a 12% premium over London at one point. And keep in mind, London is already trading at a big premium over New York. So it's not so much that there's no metal. It's the metal is in the wrong place, and the places where it isn't, they're really bidding up the price so much that these funds are saying, we're not going to take any more investor dollars because we're afraid that they're overpaying for the metal because of these regional prices, which, by the way, let me just say I'm a little skeptical of that. Have you ever known a fund manager who says, oh, no, we don't want your money? Something else is going on there. Don't know what it is. They're worried about their own risk, their own leverage or credit or liquidity. I honestly couldn't tell you. But we're worried about people overpaying for what we're selling. Yeah, nobody ever says that. But here you go. You got Indian ETF fund of funds freezing investments. Now we got a story from the Royal Mint this morning in the UK. They say expect delays for new silver products. And that's even as people are queuing up around the block at metal shops in the UK. Again, that's according to this story this morning. That's a lot of retail enthusiasm coming into the market. We haven't really seen that, at least not until these last couple of days. That's new. We've actually seen the opposite. We've seen retail selling bigly into this rally. Now, all of a sudden, the FOMO buying is stopping or is starting. And the Royal Mint is saying, you know, hey, we're short of silver in London here, so we might have to make a few less Britannias this year, or I don't know what product specifically they're talking about making less, but they're saying people are going to have to wait for silver. Meanwhile, here in the States, again, the coin shops, the dealers, they're just swimming in metal. There's plenty of silver in the U.S. There's plenty of silver on the COMEX, the New York Exchange, actually so much so that they're putting it in planes and sending it over to London. And I tell you, I'm hearing all these stories about retail enthusiasm, people queuing up around the block in the UK, India freezing withdrawals, stories about Australia, New Zealand, people going buku bonkers for metals. And yet the premiums are still so freaking low here domestically. Yesterday, I got a pre-1933 Double Eagle graded slabbed MS61 gold coin which is something that, like, historically would make my skin crawl at the thought of how high the premiums would be on an item like that, and how, like, coin dealers are usually steering people into these kinds of things because they can collect big premiums and pay themselves commissions. I paid $13 over spot for it. And this wasn't an eBay. This wasn't a guy selling it out of the, you know, out of his jacket in the street corner. This is Provident Metals and JM Bullion are selling these things here. So you've got coin dealers domestically are like desperate for dollar liquidity. Even as overseas, there's no metal anywhere to be found. The metals market is just a mess here. And that means price is going to keep rising, at least for the time being. This whole big portfolio reallocation that I think is happening. I had a Professor Dave Collum, a really smart guy. I really like listening to Dave. He put out a call for an explanation yesterday on Twitter. Why do these metals keep going up? And I really think this is the start of widespread portfolio reallocation. The typical 60-40 portfolio holds virtually zero gold or silver. It's got 60% stocks, 40% bonds, maybe a fraction of a percent gold or silver hiding in some of those funds somewhere. But people are starting to realize we're in a stock bubble. Obviously, more on that later in the show. And we're in a negative real yield environment where the interest rate bonds pay you doesn't even keep pace with the rate at which inflation is eating away at your investment. And so I think more of that, I hate to use the phrase dumb money, but more of the 60-40 portfolios, the people who just park their money in a fund, their guy runs it and they never look. I think that money is going to start chasing gold here. It probably already is. And the gold and silver market just isn't deep enough to absorb that kind of liquidity. We're talking about trillions of dollars potentially flowing into metals here. We're looking at sharply higher prices, and I think it's just starting. Now, meanwhile, we've also got a lot of developments in the trade war and tariffs and inflation this morning. First of all, President Trump is threatening to retaliate once again against Xi Jinping and their rare earths, and in particular, the not buying of U.S. soybeans this year. He's threatening to stop buying used cooking oil from China. That's interesting. That's not something I've ever really heard of, used cooking oil being a point of geopolitical contention, but there it is. There was a very brief sell-off in risk assets last night on this announcement. And we actually saw some agriculture commodities trade higher on that news. Both of those trades have since reversed. Stocks are back up again in lieu of absolute catastrophe. Number go up. And of course, U.S. agriculture commodities are falling again this morning. We also got Dollar Tree earnings today. This is interesting. Dollar Tree earnings are up big. The stock is rich. Talking about higher income consumers shopping at Dollar Tree. Who had that on their 2020s bingo card? Rich people shopping at the dollar store. Not a good sign. Just not good. What else we've got? Private data showing household goods like furniture, like household appliances starting to get more expensive. That's going to start showing up in inflation data. Oh, that's right. The inflation data is delayed because of the government shutdown, but I digress. Also worth pointing out those tariffs on furniture and home fixtures, they go into effect well today. And so we're already seeing those prices rise and the tariffs haven't even hit yet. Oops. Wall Street Journal's talking about grocery inflation and consumers struggling to adapt, wondering if tariffs are playing a role there. Look, we still don't know. We still don't know what the effect on consumer inflation from the trade war is going to be. Everybody's been kind of like cringing and, you know, like puckered up waiting for this to happen. We're starting to see some of it. We're starting to see some profit margin compression elsewhere. But all of this is hitting right as government data stops flowing. We should be getting CPI next week. We should have had it already, but it's delayed because of the shutdown. So we'll have to wait for the official data at least a few more days. Meanwhile, we have Jerome Powell is saying the end of QT is nigh. The Fed is going to stop destroying money. They're going to stop unwinding their balance sheet. Coincidentally, right as the reverse repo gets to nothing. That's interesting. The whole QT thing, they've never really been doing it. I actually saw a tweet yesterday. The Federal Reserve's holdings of long-term U.S. Treasuries, 10 years and higher, has been going up this whole time. Going to repeat that. The Federal Reserve has been a net buyer of 10, 20, and 30-year Treasuries this whole freaking time. They have been selling their T-bills, their short-dated stuff, using the proceeds and either destroying them or buying more 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, which means the Fed has kind of been doing yield curve control this whole freaking time. And now they're telling us we're going to stop QT. That is the QT that they never actually even started. What else we got? Bank earnings are in. Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, fantastic bank earnings. The big banks are killing it here. And I'm not drawing too many conclusions from that. We're seeing asset prices at all-time high, a lot of tradings, deals, mergers, and acquisitions are coming back. That's why the banks are killing it here. Watch those regional banks, though. That is the big question mark. Consumer credit is deteriorating. That will show in regional banks first. We've got a warning from the IMF about non-banks. Oh, hey, guys, we had some high-profile bankruptcies at Tricolor and First Brands, and banks are losing hundreds of millions of dollars on loans they made to these non-banks. Hurry up and issue a blog post to make us look like we're ahead of this issue, not a month behind. But there's some interesting data hiding in that IMF blog post. And OpenAI says they have a five-year plan to raise $1 trillion to fund their data center build-out. Here, let me help you. It's porn. That's their plan. Yep, it's porn. I'm pretty sure I just got my channel flagged and I'm going to kill the views on this live stream. But that's the story. OpenAI is doing porn here. Now, help me out, guys. Is porn something you do when you have other options? Is that right? Like, oh, I have a degree in astrophysics and I have job offers on the table for six figures from prestigious think tanks. And I have this wide, diverse skill set and I'm going to do all these wonderful things and make so much money. But no, I'm going to do porn instead. Right. Is that how that usually goes? Or maybe they're desperate to raise the cash and they know they can't meet these deliverables that they're planning on. They know they can't build out these data centers. But Sam Altman will do and say anything to get investors to open up their wallets. Just one more time. Let's just keep that bubble going for one more day. And you know what? If we put a few more poor middle-class people in the poorhouse over there, well, you know, that's just a price Sam is willing to pay. Guys, we got a loaded show for you this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget to hit that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm should you feel so inclined so you could come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every day. And as I said, in lieu of absolute catastrophe, number go up. The S&P 500 is up 48 points or 0.73% higher this morning. The Dow is up 197 points or 0.43% to the upside this morning. And the NASDAQ is up 253 points, a full percent higher after very briefly selling off last night following the used cooking oil announcement from President Trump. Risk assets are particularly vulnerable to these trade war headlines here. Pay attention, Bitcoiners, crypto guys, tech bros. It's the risk assets that seem to be paying the price the hardest here. Meanwhile, the dollar is a little bit weaker this morning, 98.96. That is 10 basis points lower, off by about 0.1%. Guys, the Dixie, I've always been highly critical of this statistic because the Dixie only measures the strength of the dollar against other currencies. If you really want to know how the dollar is doing, take a look at gold. Need I say more? Also, looking over at the bond market this morning, we've got a mixed bag here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.614%. That's lower by one basis point. The 10-year is off by a fraction of 1 point at 4.022%. The 2-year, meanwhile, is higher by a point at 3.489, and the 1 month at 4.088 is up by almost one basis point. Looking at Bitcoin, we're pretty much, we're a little bit lower than we were here, 111,628. That's off by $1,400 is priced on Coinbase. That drop started last night on, again, on that used cooking oil. Again, 2020's bingo. Who had used cooking oil tariffs taking down Bitcoin? That's interesting. Anyways, 111,000, well off of our lows from that Friday sell-off. But as always, guys, warnings about leverage. Be careful. Crypto winter is nigh. And another interesting story we got from Unusual Whales here on Twitter. The Department of Justice has seized about $15 billion worth of Bitcoin held in cryptocurrency wallets owned by a man who oversaw a massive pig butchering fraud operation based in Cambodia, per CNBC. They have seized $15 billion worth of Bitcoin. No, the government didn't go hack Bitcoin and take it that way. They convinced this guy to hand over his private keys voluntarily, probably with a gun to his head. And that is how the government seized the Bitcoin. But $15 billion, that is probably headed into our strategic Bitcoin reserve that President Trump started. So Uncle Sam getting a little bit richer, basically benefiting from all these people who got slaughtered by pig butchering scams. And looking over at the commodities board, there you go, guys. Metals ripping again this morning. Spot gold, $4,194, up another 52 bucks or 1.25% this morning. But the headline grabber is that 4,200 number. Actually, 4,210 for the front month December contract in New York. That's up almost 48 bucks or 1.15% higher. We've got silver is looking good again this morning. Spot silver in London, 52.63. That's up $1.23 or another 2.4% higher. Hey, check it out. That spot silver price in London, it hit $53.08 overnight. 53. Liberty Liss is going to be very busy with these updates of her Gilbert Grape meme every time silver hits a new dollar level. But remember, you'd have to be crazy to think silver would ever break above $30 as we sit here at 53. Meanwhile, December silver contract is at 51.44. Silver in London continues to trade at a big premium above New York. Now back over $2. Back over $1.20 an ounce here, but up 80 cents in New York, 1.6% higher. I don't know if you guys got the memo, but I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, higher by about a penny, pretty much unchanged. Platinum and palladium both up about 14 bucks this morning or about 0.9% higher, over $1,600 each. The platinum group metals getting in on this rally here. And crude oil is higher by about 54 cents or 0.92% higher, $59.24 for November WTI crude oil. Now let's talk about some of these wacky stories about what's going on in the metals market. First of all, this one, India's trade deficit hits year high, weighing on the rupee. We've got the Indian rupee is now at risk because of what's going on here with their trade deficit. And why does India have a big trade deficit? You might be wondering. Well, let's read on. India's trade deficit widened to the highest in more than a year in September, potentially putting further pressure on the rupee, which has hovered near record lows in recent trading sessions, much to the chagrin of Vladimir Putin, who's sitting on a massive pile of rupees with nothing to do with because he's been selling all of his oil to India. The gap between exports and imports stood at $32.15 billion last month. That's the highest since August of 2024, according to data released by the Ministry of Commerce and Industry on Wednesday. That compares with a $27.5 billion gap projected by economists, so a much bigger deficit. What is causing this big deficit here? Indian exports rose by 6.7% in September to $36.38 billion from a year earlier, data showed. That's despite the U.S. imposing the steepest tariffs in Asia on Indian goods. It was the first full month of data since those levies took effect. Indian industries have been resilient, able to absorb some of the higher costs and maintain supply chains. India's new Trade Secretary Rajesh Agarwal said that on Wednesday. Imports, meanwhile, saw a sharper surge, climbing 16.7% to $68.53 billion. The jump comes as India overhauled its goods and services tax regime last month, boosting consumption. Gold imports rose to $9.6 billion, compared with $5.4 billion in August, while oil imports stood at $14 billion in September, up from $13.2 billion the previous month. Guys, it's gold. Gold is driving the big Indian trade deficit. Gold imports nearly doubled. Now, I'm sure a lot of that is gold prices going up so much faster, but look, Indians are bonkers for gold. This is not news, and gold prices are moving higher, and India is getting in on the FOMO here. But it's not just gold. As gold has ripped, we've seen some of that Indian demand shift over to silver, which led to this article in Business Standard. And this one had me scratching my head yesterday. Why mutual funds are freezing silver ETF investments and what it means for you. Again, this is only affecting India here. Tata Mutual Fund on Tuesday joined several other mutual fund houses to temporarily suspend fresh investments in its Tata Silver ETF Fund, or FOF, citing an ongoing shortage of physical silver in the domestic market and a sharp premium in local prices compared to global benchmarks. According to the fund house, the move is a precautionary step to protect investors from potential mispricing in the scheme's net asset value due to unusual market conditions. Due to prevailing market conditions, a shortage of physical silver in the domestic market, silver is trading at a premium relative to international prices. The premium directly impacts the valuation of the scheme, Tata Mutual Fund said in its addendum. By the way, this is several of these mutual fund silver fund of funds, or FOFs. Now, what that is, guys, is that is a mutual fund that invests in silver ETFs. Why does such a thing even exist? I don't know. That's a great question, but there it is. So it's a fund that buys ETFs, and they're saying because of the extreme physical shortage of silver in India, the price of silver in India is sharply higher, and therefore we are going to freeze new investments in our fund because we're worried that you're overpaying. That strikes me as a little suspicious. I think they're actually having liquidity problems. I can't prove that. But the suspension was supposedly needed. The suspension is described as a temporary suspension and will continue only until further notice. Yeah, it's temporary until further notice. So it's temporarily permanent. The move comes at a time when the Indian silver market is facing a tight supply situation. Domestic prices have surged sharply during the festive season, with silver trading 5 to 12% higher than international prices. The premium has been driven by high festive demand for silver coins, bars, and jewelry, increased industrial demand from sectors such as solar and EVs and electronics, and limited imports and lower availability of physical bullion. Yeah, they saved that one for last. There's a shortage of silver in India. Because the Tata Silver ETF Fund of Fund invests in Tata Silver exchange-traded funds, which directly tracks the domestic price of silver in India, this gap between local and international markets makes it difficult to fairly value the scheme for new investors. By pausing fresh inflow, Tata Mutual Fund aims to protect investors from overpaying during this period of inflated silver prices. Again, I'm highly skeptical of that talking point. I think there's something else going on there. I don't know what it is. If you guys think you know what it is, let me know in the comments. But protecting investors from overpaying is not something you ever hear from these people. Not ever. Meanwhile, we've got problems in the UK also. Royal Mint warns of delivery delays as Londoners rush for silver. London demand for precious metals has pushed the Royal Mint into overdrive. A rush of orders from retail investors has prompted a ramp up in output, but the 1,100-year-old institution is warning of possible delays in silver deliveries as it races to replenish reserves. Buyers have been flooding into London's street-level bullion outlets too, with voracious demand for small bars and coins, prompting the Royal Mint to run its presses harder. Still, the institution is warning buyers of possible delays in silver deliveries. The retail rush in London and other bullion hubs is driving up global physical demand, giving an extra boost to gold and silver's rally, even with prices at record highs. The Royal Mint has struck additional gold coins and is working to replenish silver, though some customers may still face slightly longer delivery times, according to a Royal Mint spokesperson. All right, I got to ask my UK guys, my UK stackers, is this true? I have no way to verify. I'm across the pond. I don't get out much. I can tell you this is the opposite of what we have seen in many U.S. coin shops all year long. That is starting to change here in the U.S. We are starting to see more buyer activity at coin shops here in the U.S. But people queued up around the corner in the U.K. That's news to me, so much so that they're saying it's going to cause delays at the Royal Mint. Well, maybe the Royal Mint is trying to ease the shortage at the LBMA by buying less, and they're just saying, oh, the demand is insane, to make an excuse for buying less 1,000-ounce bars to make into these smaller rounds. And then we got this one from Bullion Star. Record daily orders. Yesterday, we saw our highest daily transaction count ever. Busiest day in Bullion Star's history. Customers lined up before opening. Bullion Center packed all day. Continuous restocking required. While we remain well-stocked, we're noticing tightening wholesale supply. The supply chain stress is real and spreading. Both metals seeing unprecedented retail demand. All right, let's get the asterisk out there. People who sell gold and silver are notorious hypesters. They tend to over-exaggerate in order to create a FOMO rally to get people to come buy what they're selling. I'm not saying that's what happens. That's what Bullion Star is doing here. I'm just saying always be weary of that. The industry is notorious for it. Now, Bullion Star operates predominantly in Singapore that I'm aware of, so it's possible this is another location that's seeing this. Either way, these anecdotes about retail enthusiasm for physical metal are starting to get louder and louder. Again, though, I'm still not quite seeing it here in the U.S. Let me know what you guys are seeing in your local coin shops. Meanwhile, we've got Trump threatens retaliation for China's soy boycott, and it's in the great international point of contention, used cooking oil. Yep, that's a thing. President Donald Trump said he might stop trade in cooking oil with China, injecting fresh tensions into the relationship between the world's two largest economies. Trump on Tuesday cast the potential move as retaliation against Beijing for its refusal to buy American soybeans, which is an economically hostile act, he said on True Social, that is purposefully causing difficulty for our soybean farmers. China remains well supplied with the oilseed, largely thanks to South American purchasers such as Brazil and Argentina. We are considering terminating business with China, having to do with cooking oil and other elements of trade as retribution. As an example, we can easily produce cooking oil ourselves. We don't need to purchase it from China, Trump posted on social media. Used cooking oil, or UCO, became a flashpoint in the U.S. last year, with imports employed to make renewable diesel fueling raising concerns that American soy farmers were missing out on demand. Imports from China reached a record high in 2024, according to the Agriculture Department. The Biden administration moved to stem the flood of cheap foreign supplies by preventing them from qualifying for a lucrative tax credit. And Trump this year also discouraged the use of imported supplies, receiving support from the American Soybean Association and other farm groups. So, yeah, we're not going to do China's recycling anymore of their used soybean oil, which we turn into biodiesel, especially when we've got American farmers sitting on a whole slew of soybeans that they can't sell. This makes perfect sense. I'm just surprised to see used cooking oil becoming a geopolitical economic weapon. But, yeah, that was a thing that actually caused a brief sell-off in risk assets and a brief surge in agricultural commodities and trading stocks yesterday, although that has since reversed. Meanwhile, we've got Dollar Tree rises after seeing earnings growth through 2028. This is an interesting story here. Dollar Tree shares jumped after the retailer projected earnings per share to gain at a compound rate of as much as 15% over the next 3 years. The Chesapeake, Virginia-based company said earnings per share is expected to grow by high teens percentage in fiscal 2026 due to cost benefits, while more traffic from higher income consumers has helped the company. Tariffs are expected to present a tougher hurdle in the second half. At the same time, competition has intensified as shoppers cut back on spending. The retailer disappointed investors last month when it said the benefit of price increases will dissipate and profit for the current quarter will be little changed. So we're seeing a little bit of tariff effect here. We're seeing, first of all, the inflation, higher income consumers shopping at the dollar store. That sucks. All right. That means even though they might be higher income, yeah, numerically or nominally speaking, they make a lot of dollars, but those dollars don't buy shit anymore. And so now they're being forced to buy their food at the dollar store. That's not a good thing. But they're also saying we've already raised our prices because of tariffs, which is maybe a little bit sleazy considering the tariffs haven't really gone into effect yet. They're saying that benefit we saw in our earnings is not going to last because now we have to pay the tariffs. So the higher prices are going away. A little bit of an inflation story there. Dollar Tree stock ripping this morning. Actually, it's off its highs. Look at this. Dollar Tree is now up only 2.2%. It was up as much as 9% on this news, and now it's given that back at the open. That's interesting. A lot of those gains going up in smoke here. Speaking of inflation and tariffs, private inflation data shows some goods are getting more expensive due to tariffs. Again, that remains a big question, a big outlier here. Will tariffs drive consumer inflation? There are passionate arguments on both sides of this question, but private sector measures suggest U.S. inflation picked up in September, offering more evidence of tariffs boosting certain prices in the absence of official government metrics because government shutdown. Prices for goods like household equipment and furniture rose firmly, pushing up annual inflation to the highest level in 2 years, according to Price Stats data. That's based on products sold by online retailers. Another metric from Open Brand showed that strongest monthly price growth since June, driven by personal care products and communication devices. While the September data showed a notable increase in some prices, particularly on imported merchandise, economists see inflation starting to abate somewhat next year. Key to this development will be services costs. Unlike the private sector reports, these are more fully represented in consumer price index data that may have been delayed until later this month because of the government shutdown. So furniture, personal care, communication devices, household fixtures. And then we got the Wall Street Journal saying groceries. Grocery prices keep rising. Frustrated consumers are trying to adapt. More inflation stories this morning. Shoppers say they are cutting back on purchases, stockpiling certain foods, or exploring more affordable stores, you know, like Dollar Tree. During a recent trip to supermarket, Kevin Lynn was surprised to see the price of a ribeye steak had jumped to $32.99 a pound. Oh my God. For $32.99 a pound, that steak better like mop my floors and do my taxes while it's at it. It had been several dollars cheaper just 2 weeks earlier. Over the 12 months ended August, the price of coffee increased 20.9%. Labor Department data showed ground beef was up 12.8%, bananas 6.6%. Dairy, fruits, and vegetables and cereals have all become pricier. Ground roast coffee in August hit $8.87 a pound on average, jumping nearly a dollar since May. Ground beef prices added about 30 cents over that period, rising to a record $6.32 a pound, and steaks were up by more than a dollar a pound. Rising commodity prices are driving some of the increases, including American beef. Tariffs imposed by the Trump administration have separately raised the cost of importing a variety of goods. From Spanish olive oil to Guatemalan bananas to shrimp from Vietnam, some of these costs have been absorbed by food companies. Others are being passed on to consumers. So it's important to note the two different stories in that paragraph here. The rising commodity prices, the cost, the coffee, the beef. What else were they talking about? The ground beef, the steaks. Those are isolated stories. That's not tariffs driving that. That is, you know, coffee. You had a big coffee bean die-off because of weather in other countries overseas. Tariffs certainly not helping, but that was already a thing. The U.S. beef cattle herd is smaller than it has ever been because beef prices went so low years ago. The herd has just shrank. Ranchers have been getting obliterated. That's not a tariff thing. However, things like bananas, shrimp from Vietnam, fruits and vegetables, those are absolutely tariff issues, and those are starting to show. Brendan Foley, CEO of McCormick, the spice company, said consumers, especially in low to middle income households, are shopping more strategically, making more frequent trips with fewer items in the basket. They continue to cook at home more often and shop the perimeter for fresh foods to help lower overall meal costs, Foley said on the earnings call. You know, I've always been a big proponent of that, guys. Avoid the middle aisles at the supermarket. That is where your unhealthy garbage is, your high fructose, whatever the heck. And the, you know, the cheapest and healthiest food is always going to be around the perimeter of the supermarket, your fresh meats, your fresh produce, your dairy. So avoid those center aisles. And McCormick is saying here, that's exactly what people are doing because grocery inflation is forcing them to. So we got a lot of grocery stores this morning. Meanwhile, Fed's Powell says the end of balance sheet drawdown process may be nearing. So the Fed is almost done destroying money. Hey, I just point out the balance sheet never got anywhere near where it was pre-COVID. So a lot of that printed money is going to stay in circulation. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said on Tuesday, the end of the central bank's long-running effort to shrink the size of its holdings, widely known as quantitative tightening or QT, may be coming into view. Given the central bank's long-running goal of leaving enough liquidity in the financial system to allow for firm control of short-term rates and normal money market volatility, Powell said we may approach that point in the coming months, and we are closely monitoring a wide range of indicators to know if that has happened. That is those wide range of indicators that are still being populated because the government is shut down and a lot of that data is not coming in. But the Fed is just about done QT. Powell also said pretty much expect a rate cut again in October later this month. He was a bit of a dove yesterday at that speech. Meanwhile, the banks are killing it. We're going to go pretty fast through these bank earnings, guys. Bank of America bankers' top estimates as deal-making return boosts profit. Look, Bank of America, their net interest income was pretty good. The difference between what they make on loans and what they pay out in deposits is growing. So Bank of America is doing pretty good there. Also, a lot of mergers and acquisitions. The IPO market is finally starting to thaw. Bank of America is benefiting from that. The stock was up significantly pre-market. It still is. Let's get a refresh here. Up 4.1%, $52.14 for Bank of America stock. And that is after having a pretty good year to date already. It's up 18.5% on the year now. We also got Morgan Stanley had a very good report. Morgan Stanley posts massive third quarter earnings beat. This one we're going to elaborate a little bit on because it was really good here. Earnings per share, $2.80 versus $2.10 estimated. Revenue, $18.22 billion versus $16.7 estimated. The bank said profits surged 45% from a year earlier to $4.61 billion. Revenue rose 18%. Wall Street trading desks have seen booming activity in the quarter, while investment banking continues to see a resurgence in activity from mergers and IPOs. Stocks at or near record highs bolstered Morgan Stanley's giant wealth management division as well. So Morgan Stanley killing it on the everything bubble. That stock, wow, let's refresh this. Big move, 6.14% higher for Morgan Stanley, $165.27. That's up almost 10 bucks today. The banks are doing really well here. The big banks are. Let's see if that holds in subsequent weeks when those regional banks, which are more vulnerable to credit cards not getting paid and car loans not getting paid, things like First Brands and Tricolor, we'll see if they show up in those regional bank earnings later this season. Meanwhile, we got this one from the International Monetary Fund yesterday. This is pretty interesting. The growth of non-banks is revealing new financial stability risks. Policymakers should strengthen oversight of non-bank financial intermediaries whose increasing interconnectedness with banks could exacerbate adverse shocks. First of all, what the hell is a non-bank? You might be asking. No, a non-bank is not anything that isn't a bank. A non-bank is a financial institution that is not a bank and is not regulated like a bank, but they're pretending to be one, issuing loans like a bank, collecting deposits like a bank. But you know, how hard could it be to be a bank? Actually, it turns out it's incredibly hard. And this is a huge risk that is building up in the non-banking system. Stretched asset valuations and pressures in core sovereign bond markets are keeping financial stability risks elevated amid heightened economic uncertainty. These vulnerabilities could be amplified by the growth of non-bank financial institutions through their growing importance as market makers, liquidity providers, and intermediaries in private credit, real estate, and crypto markets. While non-banks can help facilitate capital market activities and channel credit to borrowers, their expansion also increases risk-taking and interconnectedness in the financial system. Together, non-banks now hold around half of the world's financial assets. What? Non-banks hold half of the world's financial assets. Holy crap. In the United States and the euro area, many banks now have non-bank exposures that exceed their tier one capital. What? That's their buffer against losses. And they have more exposure to these non-banks pretending to be banks than they have money to offset losses from said non-banks. That's a crucial cushion that allows a bank to absorb losses and remain stable in times of crisis. Similarly, non-banks now account for half of daily foreign exchange market turnover, more than double their share of 25 years earlier, as we show in analytical chapter of the GFSR. Guys, this is private credit. This is people who have no business in the banking system taking over the banking system. And I would add, we saw a big loss on JP Morgan's earnings yesterday, that $170 million hit from Tricolor. All right, Tricolor didn't borrow from JP Morgan. Tricolor borrowed from a non-bank, and that non-bank borrowed from JP Morgan. And JP Morgan ends up ultimately holding the bag. That is the contagion risk, how private credit could eventually risk problems with global financial stability by spreading into the banks. JP Morgan showed us how yesterday. And Jamie Dimon said, there are probably more cockroaches, is the words he used to describe that situation with Tricolor and First Brands, of course. Yikes. And this one is hilarious here. OpenAI makes a five-year plan to meet $1 trillion spending pledges, the Financial Times reported. $1 trillion for a company that last year lost $5 billion on $3 billion in revenue. And they say they're going to spend $1 trillion. But you don't have $1 trillion, Sam. That's not important right now, right? That joke's like right out of the movie Airplane. ChatGPT owner OpenAI is working on new revenue lines, debt partnerships, and planning further fundraising as part of a five-year strategy to cover more than $1 trillion in pledged spending, the Financial Times reported on Wednesday. Okay, so yeah, that's the story right there. There are new revenue lines. What are those new revenue lines? Well, it's porn. But let's simply put, OpenAI's ChatGPT will soon allow erotica for adults in major policy shift. Sam posted that on X yesterday. And again, guys, I just have to point out, people with options don't do porn. Just throwing that out there. If OpenAI had, you know, if they were going to make all this money curing cancer, free education for the children of the world, all that stuff, why are you doing porn, Sam? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It does make a whole lot of sense once you realize this company has never had a path to profitability and that they're desperate to appear like they make money so that they can convince more schmucks to shell out capital in their direction so they can keep aimlessly inflating NVIDIA's revenues and we can all keep this silly AI mania going just a little bit longer. And I got to send a shout out to Depressed Options Trader CFA at Account Blown on Twitter. Mish found this one this morning. This is freaking hilarious. Breaking news, OpenAI to partner with OpenAI to help fund OpenAI. OpenAI up 90%. Sarcasm detected, but that is freaking hilarious. And hey, guys, this is a joke. This is fiction, but this is pretty much how it works. They're all funding themselves. Just a reminder, nobody saw this coming. I tweeted this yesterday. Nobody wanted to hear it. All right, but a mediocre former engineer figured this shit out 2 years ago before any of you who are out there acting like it was your idea, like you discovered it, like you were first on this story. 2 years ago, you were calling me a conspiracy theorist and laughing about this, telling all your people to YOLO into zero DTE call options. Now you're acting like you were the first one to spot it. Gag me with that noise. Anyways, just want to say thank you very much to New Engineering, who's been a Melonhead member for 17 months. Thank you for supporting the channel, New Engineering. Is the G silent? GNU? Who GNU? How do we get you on the Rogan podcast? Don't threaten me with a good time. Love you too, brother. That is a channel bucket lister right there. Joe Rogan podcast. Well, here's how you do it. You start tagging him on Twitter. And you start tagging his producers on Twitter and you say, hey, this AI bubble thing, this nobody had this story 2 years ago and the financial press told everybody to ignore him and he could have saved us trillions of dollars in losses had we listened. Start saying that on Twitter and X, get their attention. That's how you get me on Rogan. Hey, I'll do it. I'll do it in a heartbeat. Jesus, you know, I'm going to go pack a bag. I'm going to go right now. I'm seriously, we're done here. I'm out of here. We're going on Rogan. Good idea, New Engine. Good idea, New Engineering. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Kentucky Cowboy just became a YouTube member. Welcome, Kentucky, to the Melonheads. I appreciate the support very much. Just a reminder, guys, being a Melonhead member gets you one free super chat every month. Use that. I'll read and respond to your questions on the air, as well as my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon. We do our weekly Q&A get-together over Zoom as well. Looking forward to that on Friday. Thanks again, Kentucky, for the support of the channel. T.A. Chapman, thank you, sir, for the generosity. He says, hit that like button and subscribe. That Adam Taggart video yesterday with Andy Scheckman and the cup and handle explanation that we could see $96 an ounce silver was eye-opening. Can't log into metals accounts, FFS. Look, the $96 price target, without having seen that video, typically what you do with a cup and handle, you draw a line across the top level. And then you take the distance from that level down to the bottom in the middle of the cup. That becomes your potential upside above the breakout level, which would put us around $96 an ounce. It's not so crazy. It's probably going to take us a while to get there. Let's not go take out like over leverage bets on $96 silver at the end of next month. All right. I wouldn't rule it out. The market is cuckoo right now, but that's not something I'm willing to borrow and bet on. Be careful on leverage always, guys. Leverage is like there's people in graveyards. Graveyards are just full of people who went out on leverage during a mania. Just be careful. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel. Hey, he gifted 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships as well. Thank you, T.A., for the support of the channel. Welcome to the Melonheads, you 10 very lucky SOBs. Don't forget to say thank you to T.A. Chapman in the chat. That was very nice of you, sir. Steve Woitis, what's going on, brother? He says, with the fireworks and precious metals and rare earths, uranium, natural gas seems to be cheap and ignored. Is natural gas a bargain here for a long position? Look, natural gas is at this point vulnerable to this AI bubble. Let me just say that. Natural gas is a direct input to electricity and to a lesser extent, the LNG exports of the U.S. LNG is a solid bet for the U.S. here. But, you know, look, all this talk about nuclear and how we're going to build all these new nuclear plants by 2027 to power AI data centers. Guys, 15 years of nuclear power, it's not happening, okay? It is nuclear plants don't get built that fast, not even small ones. As a matter of fact, we don't know how fast small ones get built because it's never been done before, and everybody's acting like it's going to be done 1,000 times in the next 2 years. The nuclear industry is notoriously slow, plagued by analysis paralysis. The NRC has said no. They haven't said yes to anybody. It's going to take time. That being said, natural gas is probably the only viable option to power the AI mania. But even still, turbines are 5 years back ordered, large transformers, 2 to 5 years back ordered. So the new power plants are not going to show up here. Natural gas, also dotted line to the oil patch. A lot of natural gas is discovered looking for oil, or it's flared off, or it's otherwise harvested while they're drilling for oil. Look, the energy trade is interesting here. We're looking at a global glut in oil, and I have a feeling that will have some effect on the natural gas market. So I'm not crazy about that one, to be honest with you. Yeah, that's just my take on natural gas. But thank you, Steve Waters, for supporting the channel. Wally, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says platinum has historically been more expensive than gold because of its scarcity. That would imply platinum has a long way to go here, doesn't it? Should it ever be corrected to its fair value, it's probably going to be the best investment of the metals. You know, Wally, Bob Coleman says something very similar. He didn't say it should surpass gold, but he has said that platinum is on pace to be at a severe deficit in the next year or two. And we get most of it from South Africa. South African platinum miners are having troubles with the South African power grid, which is in a decrepit state of repair. They have to generate their own power on site, which brings its own set of problems. And so the platinum market is operating at a severe deficit. And much like the silver market, if you operate at a deficit for several years, eventually you get shortages and prices go cuckoo. Bob is saying that could happen within the next few years for platinum. The one thing I would always caution, platinum has a lot of exposure to the auto market. The auto market is in trouble here. Not sure if that's going to translate into affecting auto prices or not, but I have some platinum exposure. I own the PLTM ETF, and that one is doing all right here. So thank you very much, Wally, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man Randy Savage, a big red one. Thank you, First Armored Division, for the big red one. Not armored, First Infantry Division. Sorry, not armored. But thank you, Nacho Man, for your support of the channel, your generous support of the channel. I appreciate that very much. He says, buy some membership, Mish. All right. So what are we doing? We round-tripping revenue from the Melonheads now? Is that what we're doing? All right. We're taking our cues from Jensen. Now we're thinking outside the box, boys. I like it. Thank you, Nacho Man. That's awesome. And right on cue, there's Mish with the 20 new Melonheads. Welcome to the Melon Patch. You lucky SOBs. Don't forget to say thank you to Mish and Nacho Man. And was it T.A. Chapman? I think it was T.A. Yeah, and T.A. Chapman. Thank all of them, guys. It was very nice to use that. Just a reminder, feel free to use those free super chats to get your questions answered or to just crack a joke. It's always fun to see that. Thank you, Mish. Thank you, Nacho Man. Thank you, everybody, for the support of the channel. I appreciate that. You guys are awesome. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Really appreciate all the super chats and the generosity, guys. That was very nice of you. Also, you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube who support the channel, thank you so much. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.